We would like to thank Karen and Jacob Loves for sponsoring this morning's Lachson Leila Nishma, Shakespeare, Parent Leah, Ben Abba, Leah, Bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yoshua Ben Shimon Dov. Their neshamos should have an Aliyah. We are starting a brand new Mishnah this morning, the 17th Mishnah of the 5th chapter of Perkei Avos. Just to clarify, as it seemed to have led to some confusion last week, though I think we've mentioned this in the past, there are different enumerations and numberings of the various Mishnayos in Perkei Avos. Sometimes they line up, sometimes they don't. So if this is not the 17th Mishnah in your version, please locate it. If you're using a different version, it is about machlokas, arguments. So as we read it, you have the source sheets here. But if you're following along in your own Mishnah, make sure you find and locate the correct Mishnah. So the Mishnah says as follows, and as we read it, I want us to keep in mind various different methodologies and questions that we usually ask when it comes to Mishnayos, in terms of what it means, in terms of the context, in terms of the various different explanations that we could perhaps glean, and then hopefully practical takeaways from the end. But to just start off with, just to get our minds working as we read the Mishnah, think of any possible ambiguities or questions that might come up in order for us to better understand what's going on here. So the Mishnah states as follows, Kol machlokes, shehi l'shem shemayim, any argument that is for the sake of heaven, sofa lehiskayim, it will endure in the end. V'she'eino l'shem shemayim, if the argument is not for the sake of heaven, ein sofa lehiskayim, it will not endure. Let's give an example. What is a type of argument or dispute that is for the sake of heaven? This is the dispute between Hillel and Shammai. A dispute that is not for the sake of heaven. That is the controversy, the dispute, Korach and all of his cronies and his whole congregation with him. So we have our Mishnah basically set up that we have disputes for the sake of heaven will endure, disputes not for the sake of heaven will not endure, and we have example of both of those types of disputes. Sounds nice, overall picture. It's good to have a dispute for the sake of heaven, bad to have a dispute not for the sake of heaven. But once you start digging a little bit deeper, things get a little bit more confusing. First of all, what is considered a dispute? What's a disagreement? Is it the content? Is it how you do it? Is it any dispute? I think milk costs $2.79 and you think it costs $2.89, or is that a dispute? Is this a dispute between family members? I think I'm right, you think you're right. Is this a dispute related to Torah matters? I think the halacha is this way, you think the halacha is this way, I think this is the right way of approaching Judaism, you think this is the right way of approaching Judaism, you think this is the correct political opinion, you think that's the correct political opinion. So what's the content of the dispute? What are we talking about? What's the setting, as it were? So that's one thing that we want to look at, and maybe the examples that the Mishnah gives of Hillel and Shammai and Korach and his congregation will help bring that out, but a little bit unclear so far. Next, which I think is the most ambiguous term, or I guess they're all ambiguous, but this one for sure is, what does it mean to be l'shem shemayim? Right? What does it mean that a dispute is for the sake of heaven? Is that a code word for something? Is that based on my motivation? Is it based on how I dispute? We've probably all encountered people who say that their dispute is for the sake of heaven, or that their opinion is the heaven's opinion, as it were. Does that mean that it automatically is? What does it mean, the l'shem shemayim? It's a relatively common term, but I think when you dig a little bit deeper, leaves some ambiguity. So we want to highlight and elaborate what that might mean. And then finally, I think the third part, which is basically points out that all three big parts of this Mishnah are ambiguous, is what does that mean that it's sofa lehiskayim? In the end, it will endure. The dispute will endure, so it means the dispute will continue forever. Is that a good thing? Is that what we want? We want the dispute to endure? Maybe I would say I want the dispute to end, right? But it seems to be that the good type of dispute, the one that's the same, l'shem shemayim, that dispute will endure. So what does that mean that it will endure? And then on the flip side, what does it mean that it will not endure? Ein sofo l'hiskayim. If it's not l'shem shemayim, that the dispute will not endure. If anything, that, again, on some level, you could argue that's good. We don't want that dispute to endure. So we would rather that dispute stop. So what exactly is going on here? So we want to delve a little bit deeper in terms of what is a dispute. What does it mean to be for the sake of heaven and not for the sake of heaven? And then what does that dispute or enduring or not enduring mean? Is this, on a big picture level, something that... Right, so it's related to the discussion from last week. Okay, we're gonna tie that in a moment. So thanks for bringing that up, right? So one other methodological point that we used to make a lot more, but we have been, I would say it's come up recently also on some level, which is what's the connection between the various Mishnayot. So last week, if you remember, we read about different types of love, love that will endure, love that will not endure. And in truth, these two Mishnayot sometimes in some versions are actually flipped in their order. So some versions have the dispute Mishnah first and then the love Mishnah second. The way we did it, and the way that many Mishnayos have it, is that the love Mishnah comes first and the dispute Mishnah comes second. But it is important to keep in mind that those, they're sort of interchangeable in terms of which one comes first and second in the different versions. And that might hint to, regardless of which one comes first or second, a deeper connection that might tie these two Mishnayos together. So we will perhaps allude to that a little bit later on. So in terms of the context, that's good. Another thing to think about is this, and this will, the question will become clearer perhaps as we go along, but depending on how we translate all these different terms, dispute, for the sake of heaven, endure, not endure, is this a sort of a naturalistic, this is just how disputes happen? If you have a dispute and it is for the sake of heaven, it will endure. That's just the way disputes are. Is this a general statement of this is how disputes are, but there might be exceptions to that? Or is this a broad statement that this is always going to be this way? Another level of that is perhaps this isn't natural and this is sort of supernatural. This has nothing to do with how, you know, we would study in a lab or scientifically, this is what happens to disputes that are for the sake of heaven or not for the sake of heaven, but rather it's an intervention from God, right? If you do disputes for the sake of heaven, I will make them endure, whatever that means, God says. I will make them endure. If you do them not for the sake of heaven, God comes in and says, I am going to stop this dispute and it's not going to endure. So is this a natural, scientific, psychological Mishnah, or is it a supernatural, divine intervention, God's going to come in and make sure that the disputes that are for the sake of heaven endure, the ones that don't, that are not for the sake of heaven, not endure. And then finally, you know, I listed some of the questions here on the source sheet. Do the examples of Hillel and Shammai and Korach and Adasso, his congregation, do those examples add anything to our understanding of the Mishnah? Is there some hint or a message based on the fact that those are the examples used? As we saw last week when the Maharal spoke about the examples used in terms of love, so we had the love of David and Yehonasan and the love, quote-unquote, of Amnon and Tamar. Those were two, Maharal said, extremes of different types of loves, conditional loves, unconditional loves. But, you know, there's a whole middle ground of loves that are partially contingent, partially non-contingent, conditional, unconditional. So in the same sense here, we have these two types of disagreements, disputes that are put in the spotlight here. Hillel and Shammai are the disputes that are for L'shem Shammai, and those are sort of the extreme, if you want to say, totally for the sake of heaven. And then you have, on the flip side, the disputes of Korach and Adasso, which perhaps are the extreme examples of being not for the sake of heaven. And then we have all of this sort of middle, muddy ground in between, where you have disputes that are partially for the sake of heaven, partially not for the sake of heaven. So let's keep that in mind also, that these are sort of two paradigms, but there might be some middle ground, and that hopefully, depending on how we define dispute, and depending on how we define L'shem Shemayim, and depending on how we define L'hiskayim, perhaps might have something to do with our own lives that we can incorporate. Perhaps not, right? If this Mishnah is only talking about disputes that are going on in a base medrash for the sake of understanding a halacha, maybe that is part of our life, maybe it's not, it might not have a practical ramification for our home life, let's say. But perhaps it does. It will all depend on how we go about defining these different terms. Okay, so with that long-winded bulk of questions, let us turn to the commentaries and see if we can start pulling together some answers. Not each commentary is going to deal with every single aspect of it, and they're not necessarily going to deal with each question in a bullet-pointed fashion, but as we read the commentaries, hopefully we can start putting together the puzzle pieces to see the different opinions here in terms of what the Mishnah is coming to try and teach us. So let's start with Rabbeinu Yonah. So Rabbeinu Yonah here, which is the first example given, doesn't say too much, but says a little bit that can help us start gleaning some information here. So Rabbeinu Yonah says as follows. Lomar, ki, masha amar komach loket shi l'shem shamayim sofa l'skayim. That which it says, that any dispute that is for the sake of heaven will endure. Hakavana, what does that mean? Shelo olam yitkaimu b'machloket, hayom yachloku b'davar echad, l'machar b'davar acher. So he says that, what does it mean that the machloket, the dispute will endure? So it doesn't mean that that one initial dispute will last forever. But it means that if two people or two groups of people are engaging in dispute for the sake of heaven, whatever that means, then this dispute might be resolved. Right, because again, that's what we want, disputes presumably to be resolved. Otherwise, why, you know, what's the point of having a dispute if everybody just sticks to their own opinion? We want the disputes to resolve. So Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, yeah, that dispute will be resolved. But if you do it for the sake of heaven, there will be more disputes, and that's part of the game, as it were. That's part of the process of, let's assume we're talking in a Beit Medrash here, for example. That's part of the halachic and Talmudic process, is to debate. And it doesn't mean that you'll never come to a conclusion. You will. But it means that tomorrow you're going to start debating about something else. And that's great. And you'll come to a conclusion about that. And then the next day, you'll start debating about something else. And you'll come to a conclusion about that. And it creates this whole system of beautiful dialogue, back and forth, debating, where you lead to a conclusion. And then you go back at it the next day with a different dispute and a different idea that you want to debate. So this is sort of the beauty of debate, that when you do it correctly and you do it for the sake of heaven, you can continue this process with other debates. But the end goal, it seems, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, for the most part, is to try to come to a conclusion. So when we say what Rabbeinu Yonah here is adding is what endure means, it doesn't mean that that particular dispute will endure. Presumably that's not ideal. We want the dispute to be resolved. We want to know who to follow. We want to know who's right. So the idea is that the process will continue. We will go through this again with other ideas in the future. Right, so that's what he says here. Today we'll dispute this. Tomorrow we'll dispute something else. And you'll be able to have this dispute your whole lives. And it's great. Again, this is a positive process of dispute. And it's not just that it'll endure in the sense that you'll have more disputes the next day and the next day and the next day, but there's a reward here, again, presumably from God. I guess perhaps you can say that this might be naturalistic. If you have this style of living, maybe that style of living is good for you. But perhaps it's a divine intervention. If this is what type of life you're living, where you're disputing in a positive, healthy manner, then God will add years to your life, and you will endure as well. So it's not just that the dispute will endure, you and your partners will endure, so that you'll be able to have these disputes for, you know, until you're 120 years old, and that's how you're going to live out the rest of your life in this beautiful setting of disputes for the sake of heaven. But if it's she'enu l'shem shemayim, Ain sofo liskayim. Rak b'machlokes harishon yisofu v'yitamu v'sham yamusu k'machlokes shel Korach. If your dispute's not for the sake of heaven, then using Korach as a paradigm, this becomes clear. There's no more disputes after that, right? The fact that it's eino miskayim means that you're done. It's over. There's no lifelong process of argumentation and trying to find out who's right and who's wrong. It's, again, if you want to say it in an extreme fashion, with Korach it came true, right? You will just die, right? That's it, right? If your whole MO is you want to dispute not for the sake of heaven, that dispute will not endure. You will not spend the rest of your life having these beautiful disputes in the base Medrash. It's over. It's done. So that's how Rabbeinu Yonah understands L'shem Shemayim versus not L'shem Shemayim. But he doesn't really fully explain what that is, but he gives us a little bit of a glimpse, at least in terms of what enduring is. So however we explain L'shem Shemayim, and however we explain dispute, doesn't give us too much there. In terms of the enduring, he really gives us a picture of what he thinks enduring means. Not this dispute, but overall the process of dispute will continue throughout our lives. I guess that's Rabbeinu Yonah, again, starting to put the pieces together here. Rambam, in the next source, says here, again, a little, it's not going to give us the whole picture, but a small little bit of the big picture. It says, Zekulo mevuar, ve'elu dvarim al tzad haschar ve'ones. So the Rambam starts off by saying that this Mishnah should be understood based on reward and punishment. A dispute for the sake of heaven will be rewarded that it will endure. A dispute not for the sake of heaven will be punished that it will not endure. Right? Shemish sheyachlok lo lekavana pechuta. Okay, and here's going to tell us what L'shem Shemayim and not L'shem Shemayim means. If you dispute not for a small, petty reason, that's not L'shem Shemayim. Right, if it's for a petty reason, that's not L'shem Shemayim. For L'shem Shemayim, it's not for a petty reason that you're disputing. Rather, Ella Livakashato Ha'emet. It is for the sake of truth. That's L'shem Shemayim. If I want the truth, code word L'shem Shemayim, Yitkayim Ma'amaro, V'lo Yichret Dvaro. Then, what I say will endure, and it won't be cut off. So if I come at the dispute through the motivation of trying to get to the truth, then the Rambam says, God will reward me, schar v'onesh, you know, presumably this gets a little complicated how the Rambam understands reward and punishment. It might be naturalistic as it is, but I will be rewarded with my opinion enduring. On the contrast, and we'll process this in a moment, but let's see what he says at the end. On the contrast, v'chol mi sheyishayer b'nei Adam, yigmaleu Hashem b'shiyamineu min hachatayim, u'mi sheyita b'nei Adam, yanshu Hashem b'shiyamana mimenu hatshuva. So if I do the right thing, God will reward me. If I do the wrong thing, bad things will happen to me. V'zeh mevuar Ein Koshibo Imavanas Masha Kolenu B'Perek Shmini. He says, I don't have a problem with this. I think this is clear. So basically what the Rambam is saying at what's important here for our purposes is that when it comes to L'shem Shemayim, it means trying to get to the truth. And once I try to get to the truth, then what I say will endure. Now, what's going to be important here is that it's still a dispute. How many parties are to this dispute? So let's say one party is in it for the truth and another party isn't in it for the truth, right? So then that makes sense that the party that's in it for the truth will win, right? And that seems to be what the Rambam is saying here. The party that's in it for the truth will win. Where it's going to get a little more complicated, what he doesn't spell out, which we'll see in a few later sources, is what if both parties are in it for the sake of heaven, and we're in it for the truth, then what does endure mean? Right? If endure means win, then it's a little complicated, because if we're both in it for the truth, then we both, presumably, can we both win? If we look at it as right or wrong, then one of us is right, one of us is wrong. So how does my opinion endure? So basically what we still need to elaborate on is if my motivation is truth, truth doesn't always mean that I am correct. So if I am not correct, then what does it mean that the dispute or my opinion will endure? Because I'm not correct. So we still need to tease out the difference here between motivation and accuracy. That's a little bit unclear as of this point, but hopefully will become clearer as we go on. Yes, Elaine.
If you're looking
by the way, Hillel v'Shammai are two sides. Korach v'Adato is only one side. Moshe is not involved there.
Okay.
It says Machloket Korach v'Adato and not Moshe v'Korach.
Okay, good. We'll get there.
It's even more than that, I think.
Yeah,
if you're looking for the truth, then it's not a matter of who wins. You both win if you arrive at some truth.
Okay.
And Korach v'Adato, I think the quality there is that, the essence there is that he's looking for gain, for personal gain. When you're looking for truth, you're not looking for personal gain. You're looking for truth, which is outside of yourself.
Okay, so Korach, so good points. Korach and his Adaso, number one, that it doesn't say, and we'll get to this shortly, it doesn't say Korach and Moshe, right? Because the dispute, we'll have to understand why that is, but presumably because Moshe is not party to this, even though he's part of the whole umbrella of the dispute, he's not engaging in this dispute, Shelo L'shem Shemayim, so we'll address that. But you know, I think you're alluding to what's going to be one of the takeaways and one of the answers is that winning isn't necessarily the goal, right? The goal is truth. If the goal is truth, then even if I lose, I can say I'm winning. Right, exactly. Okay, good. So we'll get there. That's a good point. Let's see the Me'iri here. Now, this Me'iri, to foreshadow, will be an important piece that Rabbi Jonathan Sacks uses. We're going to close with a piece from Rabbi Sacks from his newest book, Morality, where he talks about arguments and two types of arguments. And he uses this Mishnah and this Me'iri as his sort of pin, as his main argument that he's going to be making for a particular point. So we're going to end with that. So I'm foreshadowing a little bit, but let's see here what the Me'iri says. So the Me'iri says, Kol machlokas, shehi l'shem shamayim sofo l'skayim. He quotes our Mishnah. And he says, Yesh l'tmoa. You could ask the following strong question. Eich roi lomar al machlokas shi iskayim. How can you say that a dispute will endure? Vare al kopanim lo yiskayim ela achas min adeos, shechalku aleyan. Right, so at the very least, all what's going to endure is one of those opinions. If one of them is correct, right, then only one of the correct opinion will endure. The dispute's not going to endure. Umilas machlokes kolelas habez studim. Right, but dispute, presumably, so Elaine, it's sort of getting to the crux of what you were arguing, but I think he's trying to make the question even stronger before you get to the answer, is that dispute means two sides, right? So if two sides are involved here, how can it be that the two sides will endure? One is right, one is correct. Ve'ein roi lomar deha machlokes yiskayim, umikom makom yiralisha ein machlokes miyuchesas rak lemeshev al rishon. So he says here, number one, he tries to answer it. He says that a machlokes is only when a second person argues on the first. So if I say my opinion, so you have two people. So person one says their opinion. That's not a dispute. I'm just saying my opinion. The dispute only, right, you start the clock of the dispute only when the second person argues on the first person. So technically, the first person is actually not arguing. He's just stating an opinion. It's the second person that starts the arguing. Right, Rotze Lomar, Kisha Echad Mis Ower Laslos Eza Davar, Vomer Roi Shinase Kach. So one person says, I think we should do A. Oshi Shalo Ezu Inyun, Vyoralav Shu Kach. Or he asks a question and the answer is X. Ein Zemachlokas. That's not a dispute. Now I just want to pause for a second. As he's explaining what he's saying, it's also interesting that he's expanding somewhat what we mean by dispute. Because until now, the first two sources were not so elaborate on what the context of or the content of the dispute actually is. And it seems, especially from the examples given in the Mishnah of Hillel and Shammai, Korach Adaso, there's some sort of halachic, theological argument going on here. And this is like, a base medrash type of argumentation. The Me'iri doesn't say that. The Me'iri, as of right now, is given examples that are actually much more broad than that, right? Just one person wants to do something. doesn't, it's not talking about the base medrash. It's not talking about arguing about halacha. It's one person wants to do something, right? Or one person asks a question about something. Again, no specific context of the base medrash here. Aval, so now continuing. Kishasheni yashiv v'yomar masha'ata omer shu roi shiase eino roi. It's only when the second person comes along and says, what you just wanted to do, that's not worthy of doing. That's a waste of time. Oh, masha reisa eino kamosha reisa, or what you just said was the correct answer, or what you just said was the halacha, is not the halacha. Ela behefech, rather it's the opposite. Now, ze machlokes. That now it's officially a machlokes. V'nimse. She'ein machlokes kol ela echad minat stadim. So a dispute is only the second party has the name of a disputant. V'hu hameshav al rishon. It's the one who's arguing with the first. V'amar she'im ze hashen. So now, so with that in mind, that it's the second person who's really creating the dispute. She'im ze hasheni meshav v'cholek shelo b'derech kantor v'nitzuach ela lohodas ha'emes. Sofo sheyis kaimu dvarav. So the Meiri says that if this second person comes and it's two things he says, two very important things. Shelo b'derech kantor. The way I'm arguing is not through being argumentative for the sake of being argumentative or nitzuach. I want to win. I want to beat you. Ella, rather, my goal is to get to the truth, then the second person's going to win. So now, we want to highlight here and emphasize that I really think he's adding something here, because we already saw truth with the Rambam. Rambam said that if L'shem Shemayim means truth, and if you're going for truth, then that's it'll be Miskayim. What the Rambam didn't do was deal with the fact that you have two parties here, and if one's right, one's wrong, what does that mean, miskayim? So the Meiri is dealing with that here. He's saying that the dispute is only when the second person comes and argues with the first person. So that's one thing, and we're not done with that. We'll get to that. But the other, I think, more important thing here is that he's saying that the quest for truth isn't just about my motivation. It's also about how I do it. It's about the derech kantor v'nitzuach. So not l'shem shemayim. It's not just that I'm not in it for the truth. It's that I'm in it to win, and the way I do it manifests in that motivation. So it looks, if you sort of snapshot, right? How do you know what somebody's motivation is? Right? How do you know where they're coming from? How do you know what's their inner workings? Why they're thinking something? So usually it's hard. I don't know what's in your brain. But no, here there's actually a way to figure it out. It depends on how you're arguing. And people who are arguing for the sake of heaven, for the sake of truth, will look different in their argument process than people who are arguing to win. Right? And just, you know, picture a scene from a courtroom. Right? And those who are, you know, in it to win, you can sort of get that sort of stereotypical character image in your brain as to what it would look like for me to try to destroy you in order to win. Again, it's not just about what my goal is in terms of the truth. That's part of it. It's how I go about it. That's also part of it. So that, I think that's a very important addition. That wasn't clear within the Rambam, but the Meiri here is arguing it's about how you do it, not just why you do it. But now back to his is more, I think, nuanced or complicated piece in terms of who's doing the argument. So the second person is arguing with the first person. So that if the second person is arguing for the sake of truth, and the way he's doing it, again, shows that way of truth, he's going to win. The second guy is going to win. Ki ha'emes yaseh darko. Because truth will have its way. It's a very powerful line. Truth will win out. Aval, kishe'eino l'shem shemayim. When the second person comes along, and he's not for the sake of heaven. Ela demeshe v'cholok derech kantor v'nitzuach. He's doing it in order to win. And the way he's doing it is, again, it's aggressive. Ein sofa lehiskayem. He's not, the second guy is not going to win. El she is kaimu divrei harishon. The first person will win. So the second guy who's starting the argument by disagreeing with the first person is doing it for the sake of just winning, of just, I want to prove that I'm going to beat you, then the second guy is going to lose. V'kol shekein machlokes shebidvarim achirim. And again, if it's about other things as well, not just about Torah or Halacha, so what's the main point of the Mishnah? Is that we should try to get to truth, and disagree with those who try to dispel the truth. And I think that's really important here, right? You might come to a conclusion that why argue? What's the point? Right? Let's just go for peace. And the truth is, the Mishnah is not saying don't dispute. The Mishnah is saying dispute, but do it the right way and do it for the right reasons. So if somebody's coming to deny truth, it's our responsibility to actually debate them for the sake of truth, for the sake of heaven, and in an appropriate way. But he's calling on all of us to dispute. It's not to take a back seat. So lo yogur mipnei ish, don't be afraid of anybody. Vafilu al kol mekanta yelech ledarko yaseh kertzonu vehigdil uperish ba v'amar eza hi machlokas yilashem shemayim. So let's give some examples. Hill and Shammai. Shaya echad mora v'horav asheni cholak alav. So number one, he says, one of them would say a halacha and the second would disagree. Lohodas emes, but the second would disagree in order to get to the truth. V'lo lekantor v'lo lin soach, not in order to get to win, to beat the other party, but to get to the truth. And therefore, the one who disagreed is the one who we follow, when he is correct. So now, this is a little bit different than Elaine. This is a little bit different than you were saying. He's saying there is a winner here, right? The party who's arguing for the sake of heaven, in order to get to the truth, will win, with the caveat that he's right. Now, it's a little subject. You could really go very deep in this, and I think what he's saying is more confusing than we're making it out to be. I sort of don't want to go there, because I think we'll lose the main message of what he's saying here. And we'll see Rabbi Sachs later doesn't really get involved with this first person, second person, who's right, who's wrong. It gets a little bit complicated, because you could basically say he's not really saying anything in this piece, because again, if I'm the second person's arguing, right, if he's for the sake of heaven and he's right, then he's going to win. Let's say he's for the sake of heaven, but he's wrong, so he's not going to win. Okay, but let's say he's not for the sake of heaven, but he is right. So then we're saying he's going to lose. Okay, and again, I think that there's more to who's right and who's wrong than just who's arguing and what their motivation is. So it's a little complicated. We'll let you think about that a little bit more for homework. But Freda, before we get to you, let's just finish off the last sentence. Ve'ezehi machlokes shelo l'shem shemayim. What's the non for the sake of heaven argument? That's Korach and Adasso. Sheba'u lekanter al Moshe Rabbeinu. They came in order to disagree with Moshe, not for the sake of truth, but just for the sake of winning and beating him. Vanagaso midera kina v'kanter. They came from jealousy and their again argumentativeness, v'nitzuach aggressiveness. They wanted to win. V'loniskay ma'atzaso, and what they wanted didn't end up happening. V'shlech biat pisho, and again there was negative consequences that came out of that. The question that I guess you want to ask before we get to Freda, the question you want to ask here. Just hold on. Mute yourselves, guys. Mute. Okay, got an echo. The question you want to ask here, which we'll get to in a future source, is what is Korach right? I mean, because then again, there's two pieces to what we're trying to say. We're splitting between right and wrong. There is a right and wrong, right? And then there's also a motivation. So Hillel and Shammai could be arguing, and they're arguing, let's say, for the right reasons, and they're arguing the right way, and then we could determine who's right and who's wrong and go by the one who's right. Korach and Moshe, there's the content of Korach's argument, and then there's how Korach argues. So all we've said so far is how Korach argues is wrong, and his motivation for arguing is wrong. But let's say, again, as a thought experiment, and we'll perhaps get to this in a future source, what if Korach did it the right way, right? What if Korach came to Moshe and say, you know, Moshe, I'm really thinking about this more deeply, and, you know, maybe we should have a more, universal application of who gets to lead. Maybe we should make this more of a democracy. Maybe you know, or and if it got to the core of what his arguments were, what would have happened, right? Are we saying that he had no basis in his arguments at all? Or are we saying just the way he did it was so wrong and for the wrong motivations that we don't even listen to what he has to say? But in theory, if he did it the right way and he did it with respect, maybe that would have lasted. Maybe that would have endured. Maybe there would have been a change in the system, as it were. Okay, so something to think about. Yeah, I think we'll see that in a future source. But first we'll get to Freda. Yeah.
So based on what the Meiri is saying, using Hillel and Shammai is actually not a good idea, because we know that today we paskin like Hillel, but everybody says v'mei Mashiach when we go according to Shammai.
Okay,
which so now tells us, according to that, it's the whole, that ruins this whole theory of Machloket, and maybe a better choice would have been Benot Slavchad, who came in a very respectful manner and spoke to Moshe very respectfully, because they didn't agree with the way things were being done. But because they spoke so respectfully, which is a whole shiur in itself, but in the end, their point was taken.
Okay, so first of all, I think that's a great example. I think that's exactly, you know, that's sort of the counter Korach point. Here they had a point. It was against the system, as it were. And they came about it respectfully, and they did have lasting change based on that. So I think it's an excellent point. You know, the Pesach Sheni people, you know, throw them in there as well. Whether or not, okay, so now we have to understand what Hillel and Shammai has to do with this. I just want to say before, we will, in the next source, we'll see that a little bit better. But just to the point of that, everybody says that in Yemos HaMashiach will follow Beis Shammai, that's not exactly true. That's a Kabbalistic source that, I'm not saying it's not true, but it's not a everybody says type of thing. But in order to understand what Hillel and Shammai are doing here, we will see that a little bit more in the next source. Elaine, okay. Yeah.
Can you have, I don't remember exactly the two Rabbanim, but I remember the story of two Rabbanim in the Gemara. There's a machloket, and one says, I know I'm right, and let the Kotlei Beit HaMikdash will come, and they come together. But in the end, the answer is that you're right, but it's going to be the other rabbis or the Sanhedrin, what they decided, because it's, you know, here on earth for the people to mekayem et hamitzvah, lo, you know, the truth in heaven. So the idea of searching for the truth in and of itself is not necessarily the end goal, but how it's workable here and consensus. What I'm talking about, because I don't remember the exact.
Yeah, so it's the Gemara about Tanur Shel Achnai. It's a famous Gemara in Bava Metzia discusses a dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and all of his people in the Beis Medrash. And it actually, according to many, actually has to do with Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, because he was a Beis Shammai guy, and everybody else were basically Beis Hillel type of people. They didn't, even though he was correct, as it were, from a, you know, there was a divine signals that he was correct, they didn't follow him, and they said, Lo Bashamayim, it's not in heaven, and we paskin based on, you know, we follow the majority. Because of that, they put in excommunication, and there's a whole fascinating story there, which we will get to at some point when we finish Perkei Avos and move on to our series on Agadata. It is definitely
So then the search for truth, you can find truth, but that's not necessarily the end goal.
Meaning there will be, right. Perhaps in the next source, that'll become a little bit clearer. We don't always follow The question is what the truth there was and what the signals there from God were, and why the majority thought he was wrong. And it, there's a lot of complicated underneath factors that are involved, but it's for sure an important parallel to this Mishnah. But until we fully understand what's going on there, I'm not sure it will be easily transferable takeaway that's not disputed on some level. But I guess we're all about the disputes here. Okay, so let's... yes, Barbara.
So just 2 points. Number one, Korach, from a genealogical, if that's a genealogy standpoint, Korach thought that he was right, number one. Number two, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai had pretty acrimonious arguments that, I don't know if you were the one who said it a few years ago, that they may have come to blows and even death between them.
Barbara, I'm so happy that you remember that. Okay. So first of all, in terms of what Korach's goals were, we'll get to on some level, you know, if he thought he's right. I'm not sure he thought he was right. I think our assumption from this Mishnah and presumably from the Chumash is that at the very least his motivation was questionable. But in terms of your second question, I refer you back here to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah does not say Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Our Mishnah says Hillel and Shammai. Okay, so that's going to be important, and we're actually going to see that in a source in a few minutes. We're not talking about the house of Hillel and the house of Shammai. We're talking about Hillel and Shammai themselves, the original people. Okay, so keep that in mind. But good point. Let's see now. Let's see the Rashbats. He's a little all over the place, so hopefully it won't throw us off too much. But I'll try to make it a little bit streamlined as we go through it. But the Rashbats here picks up on a lot of different issues and brings home some of the points that we've been dancing around. So he writes here as follows. Kol machlokas shel Hashem Shamayim sofo l'iskayim. What does this mean? So number one, there's an important point which we haven't addressed, is what does this have to do connection to previous Mishnayos? So he says, Lefisha ben Mishnayos harishonos perish mashiyesh ben achasid v'arasha. If you remember from a bunch of weeks ago, we spoke about what's a pious person, what's a wicked person, what type of character traits do they have, how, in terms of the base medrash, in terms of giving tzedakah, in terms of anger, right? The whole past 3 or 4 months that we've been doing Mishnayos have all been talking about different character traits, and piety and wickedness come into the discussion, right? So that's what we're jumping off of that. Samach lahem be'elu ha-mishnayos, mashiyesh bein, mashu l'shem shemayim, v'she'enu l'shem shemayim. So now we're transitioning from what's pious and what's wicked to what's for the sake of heaven and what's not for the sake of heaven. I would add, I don't remember where I saw it, but I would add that it could also be based on the fact that we just saw different character traits, right? And there's different types of people and different types of learners, right? All the stuff we've been talking about for a bunch of months, then obviously there's going to be disputes, right? You have all these different types of people, all these different types of personalities, all these different types of processing, then you're going to have people disagreeing with each other. So now we go from all of that discussion of all these different types of arba midos b'this and arba deos and this and arba this and that, so many different permutations of people, of course there's going to be disputes because people process things differently. But that's another explanation as to why we're jumping off of that. So he says, so we're going from pious and wicked to sake of heaven, not sake of heaven. What is mashu miskayim, shena miskayim, what endures, what doesn't endure? And then what we're going to get to soon, people in future Mishnayos, people who help the public and those who make the public sin. The ain suffik ki amachlokas hamiskayimes hi ra'ah. So he points out, he's like, again, this is one of our original questions. There's no question that a dispute that endures is a problem, right? We don't want disputes enduring. We don't want people keeping fighting. So again, it's a sort of counter. Our mission seems a little bit strange. We're saying that the good dispute's going to endure. We don't want a dispute to endure. So the ain suffik ki amachlokas hamiskayimes hi ra'ah. We don't want disputes to go forever. That's bad. Shrei amru no trikon makecharon la koikilia. Commotion is kebelimudenu. So what does it mean? If it's so bad, and we have textual proofs, but even just logical proofs, it's bad to have disputes endure. We want them to be resolved. So what does it mean that the dispute that's for the sake of heaven is going to endure? So the Rambam says, Perush Rabbeinu Moshe, Shadvarim yiskaimu lefi shekiven shemachlokes hi l'shem shemayim, eno miskaven listor divrei chaveru, eladasa emes. So the Rambam and the Meiri said something similarly, is that our goal is to get to truth. V'akadosh Baruch Hu maskim al yadam sheyiskaimu advarim. And the one who wants to who's pursuing the truth, we will go based on that person. Again, there's a little bit of a strangeness. What if they're both pursuing the truth? Then how do we know which one endures, which one's correct, which one we follow? They're both pursuing truth. Okay, so he says, Ve'eni yodea. So I'm not really sure. Lefi perusho, ma bein machlokes Hillel v'Shammai, lemachlokes Korach v'Hadasso. What's the difference between these two disputes, between Hillel and Shammai and Korach and his followers? Ki kan v'kan, divrei emes, hem miskaimin. Right, everybody's trying to get to the truth. Torah miskaima, she'echolk ala Korach. Torah wins versus Korach. V'divrei Shammai nisbatlu, she'em beis Shammai v'makom Hillel mishnah, beis Hillel mishnah. We follow beis Hillel, not Beis Shammai. So in truth is, what if the goal here is to get to who's right, right, and what the truth is, well, then there's no difference between Hillel and Shammai and Korach and Hadasso, because in both cases, one group wins and one group loses. So if you're emphasizing who's going to be correct and who's going to endure, then in both cases, the wrong part, then Shammai is, you're basically lining up Shammai as the same as Korach and Hadassah. They lose. We don't follow them. So he's not so sure that it's about who's right and who's wrong and who's going to win and who's going to lose in terms of the enduring, because then Shammai is sort of stuck here. As we say, he says, Kemosh Nizkar Berosh Yivamos Uvimakos Bachos Acherim. Again, we don't follow Beis Shammai. Rather, V'im Nefarish Hakiyum La'anshe Machlokes Yavad Arar Kipshuto. So instead, what if we reinterpret this and we don't say that it's the dispute, the ideas that are going to endure, but rather the people are going to endure? Right? Not the ideas, but the people. Anshei HaMachlokes. Yavo Adavar Kipshuto. Then it makes sense. Shrei Hillel v'Shammai Niskaimu. They both lived. They both, again, they lived out their lives arguing with each other. V'Korach v'Hadasso avdu, but Korach and his followers got destroyed. So here, what the Tashbetz is doing, which I think is really important, is he's removing this from the ideas being endured, because that doesn't fit here. Because Shammai, we don't follow him. To rather, the people will endure. So they'll keep fighting. Great. Hillel and Shammai, though, they're doing it, let's say, for the sake of heaven. So they will continue to endure. Korach v'Hadasso, not for the sake of heaven, they're gonna get destroyed. So, now another possibility. Maybe it means that they're going to admit to each other, right? We're sort of setting the ground rules here. We're not in this to beat each other. We're here to get to the bottom of it, to get to the truth.
And
when one side proves their side is correct, then the other side will give up. They'll admit, they'll throw in the towel, they'll give up. In certain cases, Beis Hillel, this is talking about Beis Hillel, not Hillel, but same point, Beis Hillel sometimes said, right, Beis Shammai, you're right. And we agree, and we'll follow you. Like it in the Gemara and Gittin. The Chazar Rabbi Akiva, Leos Shona Keben Azai, different example. Rabbi Akiva was proven wrong, and he goes like Ben Azai, like the Gemara and Tainus. So that's another possibility, that it's about, we're willing to admit we're wrong, and we're willing to go with you. We're willing to say that we're wrong. Korach and Hadassah, presumably, were not that way. And even if they're disproven, they're going to stick to their guns, and they're not going to give up, and they're going to keep fighting, and they're going to find something else, and they're not willing to admit that they were wrong and admit their mistake. So if you're in it to get to the truth, and you lay that as the foundation to the disagreement, then once we're proven wrong, then we are able to admit that we're wrong. another possibility. The Efshel Faris should divrei shneim yiskaimu. Ah, and this gets to, I think, what Elaine, you were alluding to before. Maybe you can say that they both, what they, both opinions endure. Ha'oser va'amatir, even though they're contradictory. One says it's okay, one says it's not okay. One says it's kosher, one says it's not kosher. How can it be that they both endure? Either one's right or one's wrong. No, l'fisha elu ve'elu divrei Elokim heim. Right, there's a very famous concept that both the opinions of Beis Hillel or Hillel and Shammai, they're both the word of God. And because they're both the word of God, even if we have to follow one of them for the sake of psak, for the sake of, you know, you need an answer, you need to know what to do, so we got to pick. And, you know, Gemara and Erev in there, with just this quoting, picks usually to follow Hillel and Beis Hillel over Beis Shammai. But there's truth, there's multiple truths, and there's both of them have an enduring factor. And as Freda said before, on a Kabbalistic level, it could be that in the future we will follow Beis Shammai over Beis Hillel because there is truth to Beis Shammai as well. So there's multiple competing truths. It's not a zero-sum game where it's either there's one winner and one loser, right? There could be multiple truths, and that's what it means that it endures. Echad mevi ra'i l'dvar of me'atorah. Valzen Nesar, Kulam not numeroa echad, but everything, their proofs are all coming from the Torah. But it's not like one is making it up and one is coming from ego and one is coming from their own logical. Right? They're all bringing proofs from the Torah. So if the Torah is true, then their proof from the Torah could be true also, even if we end up following one over the other. Ulefize, and that's why it says, Machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel Betzara Sabas Im Hi Muteres She Beis Shammai Asu Kedivrayim. And there were times where Beis Shammai did like Beis Hillel. Va'af al pisha yubnei amam zerim lefisha hu mechayve krisos adivrei Beis Hillel lo nimnum losos kedivrayim. Right, so there's famous examples of that there were, in order to even though Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel disagreed with things that were so fundamental that had to do with who was considered a mamzer, who was not considered a mamzer, things that had to do with families, and the ramifications were extreme. Still, even though they disagreed, once the halacha was put in terms of we follow one of them, then the other one followed suit, and it didn't create a friction and a machlokes and a dispute within the practical frameworks of how we live. So the way the Rashbats ends is with a suggestion that maybe they're both true, and that's why they're both enduring, even if we only follow one. And Elaine, that has to do probably with the Gemara Tanur Shalachnai, and Freda, I think that also has to do with what you said in terms of following Beis Shammai at the end. There's truth to both, and that's why they endure. So the main points, according to the Rashbats, again, he had a few sort of bullet-pointed ideas and different ways of explaining it, but first he moves away from saying that the idea endures, because he's not so happy by saying the idea endures, because, one's right, one's wrong. So then he says maybe it's not about the ideas, it's about the person endures. So Hillel and Shammai endure, Korach and Hadassah don't endure. But then at the end, he gives an explanation. It's possible you can look at the ideas also, because the ideas could endure and there could be multiple truths, as it were. It's not just about being right or wrong or disproving somebody else.
And sometimes you have teiku.
Let's say it again, Barbara.
Sometimes you have teiku in the Gemara.
Right, and sometimes we don't know the answer. That's true too.
Rabbi Shalom. And they're both right, in other words. They could both be right.
Correct.
But is it possible was lost?
Hold on, guys.
Both of them, there was a pshara. There was a pshara as done. The pshara is samim yamin lesmol, madlikim lesmol yamin. So we take both opinions and we combine it as a pshara. The sofa shel machloket, which is very nice, I think.
Okay, so sometimes there's a compromise. Okay, good. Freddie, what were you saying?
I was saying the very reason you have a different schools of thought, could it very well be that the original Masara from Sinai was lost and they're trying to recreate the halacha? It's that that the original Masara was lost, and that's why we had this problem.
Okay, so that gets into a whole bigger question in terms of the is a book called Dynamics of Dispute that talks about all the different possible reasons as to why we have disputes. So there's a dispute about why we have disputes, as you can probably guess. But it's possible that that's part of it. There are some things that might have been lost or didn't do enough remembering or research, and they're trying to recreate it. That's one explanation. It's not the whole explanation. I think that you can learn this Mishnah regardless of how you understand why there were disputes in the first place. That this could apply. I think you can respond either way, depending on it doesn't. I don't think it matters how you understand disputes in order to understand this mission. I think you could have disputes regardless of whether or not it was lost or whether or not this was part of the system in the first place. Okay, I guess the question is at this point how we want to do this. All right, I think what we'll do is we'll stop here and we'll pick up next week. I'm not sure if we have enough for a full shiur next week, but I'll find some stuff to add in. But we definitely this piece of Maaseh HaYetzer is important. These two photocopied pieces over here, we could do quickly, but might as well slow it down and do it better next week. And then there's the piece from Rabbi Sachs I told you I wanted to share with you. So we'll save that for next week. I'd rather do that than rush through it now. At 10:30, we're having another program here on this same Zoom led by Malka Simon. It's going to be a virtual tour.